Libro.fm is the first audiobook company to make it possible for customers to purchase digital audiobooks through their local independent bookstore of choice. A small independent company based in Seattle, Washington, Libro.fm has over 600 indie bookstore partners and offers over 100,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and hundreds of bookseller recommendations. Unlike other audiobook companies, Libro.fm lets users directly support their local independent bookstores just by listening. Each time a Libro.fm customer makes a purchase of an audiobook, or their membership fee is charged, that listener's local bookstore will receive a percentage of the profits. New Libro.fm users can start monthly memberships, purchase individual audiobooks, and gift both memberships and audiobooks by creating a free account and selecting their bookstore of choice. Visit the Libro.fm website now at www.libro.fm to get started with a free audiobook and experience the difference.
Importantly, the views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Booksellers Association or the American Booksellers for Free Expression.
You are listening to CounterSpeak, the free speech report of the American Booksellers for Free Expression.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of CounterSpeak. My name is Dave Grogan. I'm here with Maria Peroni.
Hi, everyone.
So Sydney Girard spoke over the phone with Catherine Young, and she's a translator of an author named Akram Alisli. And he's an author, and he's in Azerbaijan, a country, used to be part of Russia. They have a long-standing conflict with Armenia, and it's brutal. It really is. His books were being burned because they came off as being sympathetic to the Armenian people. Now, he criticized both his own country and Armenia in regards to their conflict and the atrocities that have been committed in that area. And I'm not going to get into them all, but this interview is fascinating. I mean, we're not talking about flaming somebody on social media. We're talking about burning actual books because they didn't like the fact that he could actually have some sort of empathy for the so-called enemy. It was really, Catherine Young is a translator, but she really has a great grasp of what's going on there. And I was fascinated by it.
Yeah, it was really eye-opening, and I think you will all enjoy it a lot.
So without further ado, why don't we get to that interview? Sydney does a great job, and thanks for listening to CounterSpeak. Remember to subscribe to our podcast and give us 5 stars. All right.
Thank you.
Here's the interview.
Catherine, we are here to talk about the author Akram Alisli. He was named a member of parliament, and he was the people's writer of Azerbaijan for a very long time. How widely read was his work?
Extremely widely read. He studied in Moscow at the very famous Gorky Literary Institute in the 1960s, or late 50s, early 60s, and had come up through the Soviet system of writers and was for a long time one of the premier writers of Azerbaijan when Azerbaijan was part of the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. and that continued after Azerbaijan became an independent country. I mean, he sold books in, I think it's over 30 languages, millions and millions of books, many of those during the Soviet period when the books were being sold to Eastern Europe, but also afterwards. And, of course, he was elected a member of parliament in Azerbaijan in 2005, and he served a 5-year term.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for introducing us to his latest book, Farewell, Alise, which features 3 novellas, in particular Stone Dreams. And it was that novella that inspired such intense political controversy in Azerbaijan because it depicted the genocide and ethnic cleansing of Armenians in the 20th century. Why did this novella cause such an uproar in Azerbaijan?
Well, of course, there has been conflict going on since before the breakup of the Soviet Union, starting, I believe, in 1987 was the most recent iteration of the conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia over the enclave of Nagorno-Karabakh. And that fighting has been off and on for you know, literally the last 20-some years. Mm-hmm. There has been ethnic cleansing. There have been pogroms on both sides. There have been atrocities on both sides. And so this novella, which came out it was written much earlier, but it wasn't mm-hmm. published until 2012, and there was a specific reason it was published, which had to do with that conflict. But in any case, it is a very humane and tolerant view. It looks at people as people. It looks
yes.
at Armenians as people. And for that, you know, when you're in a state of war with another country, it's a difficult, sometimes a difficult mental adjustment for mm-hmm. for people in Azerbaijan to understand. I should also say that the third novella of this trilogy, A Fantastical Traffic Jam,
yes.
is a fictionalized a depiction of autocracy and corruption at the highest levels in a country that may or may not resemble contemporary Azerbaijan. And that, I believe Mr. Alisli thinks that that novella, which has never been published in Azerbaijan, may be also to blame for some of his troubles.
Aha, uh-huh, understood. Speaking of his troubles, you let us know that our interview happens to be taking place on the 6th anniversary week of when his books were burned in Azerbaijan. Can you tell us what led to his book burning?
The novella Stone Dreams, the one about the Azerbaijani, and all of them are to some degree about the conflicts between Armenians and Azerbaijanis, but the mm-hmm. one that was most, shall we say, vilified when it appeared only in Russian in a magazine called Druzhba Narodov in the very end of 2012. And that actually only appeared in Azerbaijan in two copies. There were something like two subscriptions.
Oh, wow.
So nobody had actually seen the book, but everybody was angry about it.
Uh-huh.
And the book burnings took place in Baku, which is the capital, of course, of Azerbaijan, in Ganja, the second city, and in Mr. Ailisli's hometown of Ailis. And, of course, Ailisli is his pen name, and it's taken from the name of the village Ailis, where these stories take place.
Oh, I did not realize that. Okay. And so now, keep going.
No, I really just wanted to say that this was all a frenzy ripped up among people by the powers that be for a book that nobody had actually read.
Yes.
And the books that were burned were not actually copies of Stone Dreams because it didn't exist in book form in that country. It was all the books that Mr. Alisli had written previously that were located in libraries all over the country.
Oh,
so
wow.
Were brought and burned.
So that was actually another question I had for you. Are his books available in the country anywhere anymore?
That is an excellent question. I don't know about the early books.
Okay.
But certainly the two later novellas of this series, that is Stone Dreams and A Fantastical Traffic Jam, were never available
okay.
in Azerbaijan, in either Azeri or Russian, except in a tiny 50-copy private edition.
Aha, uh-huh, understood.
And then parts of them have been back-translated by angry people into Azeri from Russian versions, but neither authoritative editions of them have not been published.
Oh, okay, gotcha. And Baku, which you mentioned is where one of the book burnings took place, that's where Mr. Alisli lives now, under a sort of detainment, correct?
Yeah, I would call it de facto house arrest.
Okay.
And the reason is because when he tried to leave the country in April of 2016 to go to Italy to a writer's conference where the Italian edition of Stone Dreams had just been published, and he was 79 years old at the time, he went to the airport. It is not entirely clear what happened, but he was eventually charged with hooliganism for having beaten up an airport security guard. And as a result of the judicial process, his papers, his passport was confiscated,
mm-hmm.
which means that, of course, he can't leave the country, but
yeah.
he can't. The passport for Azerbaijanis is like our driver's license. It's your identity document. It
oh.
gets you into health care. It allows you to, you know, access social services. And so even though there is a law that there is supposed to be due process within 9 months in Azerbaijan, as a matter of fact, there has still been no due process, and he is unable to travel, unable to get medical care, and he needs it. He's 81 years old now.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I realized it was that extensive. I didn't realize what all the documentation was required to continue as a healthy citizen in Azerbaijan.
Right.
Everything that he's faced, you know, he's been the subject of censorship. He has experienced his books being burned. There have been threats to his safety, and now he's under house arrest, essentially. It sounds like this is a mix of both the government imposing these situations on him, but also citizens. Is that correct?
Let me say that in 2017, Polity 4, which is a widely respected ranking composed by political scientists, rated Azerbaijan in the bottom 10 of nations in terms of authoritarianism. In other words, it's ranking with Cuba and China and
wow.
Iran.
Okay.
It's really, of course, there's public opinion and people are active in the streets in various causes, but I would say that it's unlikely that a spontaneous popular movement to suppress an author would pop up without somebody in authority being behind it.
Yes, of course, that's understandable. And so how did his book was published in the U.S. by Academic Studies Press. How did his book make his way to the English side?
So I was approached in 2014 by Natasha Perova in Moscow, who is a famous publisher and now literary agent. And she just sent an email saying, I understand that you're interested in human rights cases, and boy, do I have one for you. So the way that the publications and translations work in this country, translation itself, in other words, the translated component is one of the largest cost items in publishing a translation. Let's say it costs $10,000 to $12,000 to publish a book. You're going to have to put another maybe $8,000 to $10,000 on top of that to pay the translator.
Okay.
And of course, that's a backbreaker for small publishers.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts for
yes.
this book, and then I went shopping for a publisher. The book has been hampered, and this is a marketing issue really, because people don't know how to categorize it. Is it literary fiction? Which it is, of course.
Yep.
Or is it a human rights marketing question? And so for that reason, it was harder to find a publisher that was willing to take it on.
Understand.
Because it falls in between. And I should say there's a fourth part of this book. We talked about the trilogy of mm-hmm. novellas, but there is a nonfiction essay that Academic Studies Press commissioned from the author to reflect on what it means to be a political, you know, detainee, if you like,
mm-hmm.
and watch your books burned. And so there's a nonfiction component, sort of analyzing, thinking about, reflecting on his experiences that's also part of his collection.
Yeah, it seems like he's had, I read all of the material at the front of the book in addition to the rest of the book, but I was surprised at just how awful the situation is for him. I can't imagine something like this happening in America, but I mean, perhaps it could, considering the state of our world today. But I feel like this must be a very difficult life for Mr. Eilisley, especially considering that he's 81 years old and he spent his entire life being a writer, and now all of that is kind of gone for him.
Well, I mean, yes and no. In some senses, it is, of course, all gone. But writers are, first of all, solitary people. But second of all, I'm speaking for myself now, we're a little
yes.
vain. And the fact that my book might be published in, you know, 20 different languages all over the world, that people in Argentina know who I am, that would mean something to me as a writer.
Yes.
And I should say, by the way, that the Argentine edition has been pirated. It's very difficult if you are under de facto house arrest in Azerbaijan with no substantive income to fight piracy of your book in Argentina.
Oh, yes.
And that has happened not just in Argentina, but there have been unauthorized editions in Armenia, which have been national bestsellers for the last few years.
And how has the book been received in the United States? Have you heard anything yet so far?
We have some reviews. It's early in the process. The book was released at the end of November, which, of course, is during the holiday marketing
yep.
season. So the effort to get the word out is just gearing up, really.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, with this anniversary this week of the sixth anniversary of the burning of the books in Azerbaijan, we're trying very hard to make sure that people are aware that book burning, even though we in America may not, you know, have it as part of our conscious daily lives, it's going on in other parts of the world, and we need to be cognizant of the fact that they didn't just burn books in the Inquisition or during the Nazi era. They're
yes.
burning books now in other parts of our world.
And in addition to that, you let us know that Mr. Eilisley's website suddenly disappeared back in at the end of last year. So you've been very involved in collecting materials about his case, and you have a page devoted to him on your website. Can you tell me more about your efforts in maintaining his information?
Well, the website that he had was both in English and in Azeri,
mm-hmm.
And it was a very interesting website. It had many photographs of the town of Eilis and the Armenian cultural monuments, which had been there for centuries, and they were all bulldozed within the last 15 or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a historical record of a town and a time and a place, which is the central motif of these novellas. So that's all gone. And I think it's probably not a coincidence, although we don't know, that it disappeared, you know, pretty much during the same time when his book was being published in English. So there's been a sort of very much handcrafted, homemade human rights campaign that mm-hmm. I and the publisher and others, PEN America, for example, have been waging on behalf of this writer to make sure that the word still gets out, that people know that this book is now available in English.
Yeah. Of course, go ahead.
The short attention span in America and the fact that many people here don't really know where Azerbaijan is and, you know, may not be aware of the situation there, it's been an uphill struggle.
In addition to your website, are there any other resources people can use to collect information and learn more about Mr. Eilisli?
Well, he's got a good page on Wikipedia that mm-hmm. has a lot of information, a lot of links to his story. And there is also a petition at change.org that we started, but as part of the petition, we put in a number of the links to statements, for example, by PEN International, PEN America, Human Rights Watch, a number of organizations, and also the journalism that's been done on this case. And if you go to my website or to the change.org petition, I believe, you can see the video of the books, his books being burned in Ganja. That's Azerbaijan's second biggest city.
Wow. Thank you for that information. I appreciate that. Is there anything that you would recommend that booksellers are able to do, whether that's writing to their congressperson or a relevant committee in Washington, D.C., in the effort to help Mr. Eilisli regain his freedom, essentially?
Well, I would say highlight the book. I mean, not just during Banned Books Week, which is not till September, but mm-hmm. this is a burned book. I mean, I think that's kind of almost a mystical thing, right? A book that was burned, and yet you can buy it in your bookstore and read it and enter another world. A world of extraordinary vitality and richness. I have to say, I am a poet as well as a translator, and I want to write poems about these characters.
Yes.
I find we are entering a predominantly Muslim society at the end of the 20th century in a world that is far bigger than that might suggest. The town Eilis was a stop on the Silk Road. And so people from Armenia, Azerbaijan, China, Europe, Iran, you know, people from of Jewish background, everybody went through this town. And all of those people and the threads of their cultures and languages and their foods, their dances, all of those go into making this town a fascinating town. And the characters, you know, unusual and quirky and very, very interesting as characters. So it's not just a, you know, sort of this, I imagined when I heard about the book that it was going to be a dry screed about human rights, about a case that I didn't really, you know, have much investment in. In fact, of course, it's a fully realized world.
Yes.
There's a lot of reference in the book to Faulkner, and it turns out that Mr. Eilisli visited Faulkner's home in Roanoke in Mississippi.
Okay.
And so, I mean, that notion of Faulkner's fully realized world seems to me to also apply to the world of Eilis created by Akram Eilisli.
Yes, I found it to be an incredibly rich and incredibly, I felt incredibly educated by it. This obviously is a world that I'm unfamiliar with, and I feel like he really, via you, really painted a beautiful portrait of what Azerbaijan is.
Thank you. Going back to the question of what booksellers should do, author talks, since the author can't come, I can come. But I think general human rights activism, supporting what PEN America is doing, we have a postcard campaign in addition to the change.org petition that's done through our publisher, Academic Studies Press. But we can get you postcards to put in your bookstore that people can sign to send to the president of Azerbaijan, supporting the dismissal of charges against Akram Eilisli.
Okay.
I think just talking about it and also just highlighting the fact that there's this miraculous thing, this book that was burned and now it exists in English.
And
it's not burning.
Have you faced any repercussions as the translator of this book and based on all of your involvement with his case?
I have not. I have experienced a great deal of frustration because I think we're at a time in America where we're turning inward and there is a lot of sort of compassion fatigue. I mean, mm-hmm. there are so many things that we should care about and do care about. The situation in a country where most of us, you know, have never been and may not know much about It's hard to feel compassion for people there. Mm-hmm. I had trouble, for the reasons that I talked about earlier in terms of marketing, getting to, spaces in book fairs and book festivals because people don't know what to do with it. It's a work in translation, mm-hmm. it's a work of fiction, and it's also a work that tells a human rights story in and of itself because it exists. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I would say to booksellers and to anybody else, you know, think about it broadly, you know, use all of those different avenues to talk about who this writer is and why people should read the book. So I am hopeful, and I am knocking wood as I say this, that there won't be repercussions from me personally, and certainly not from Mr. Eilisley. I think all of us are invested in the notion that the more we can tell people about what has happened to him, the better it will be for everybody, not just him, but for other people. There's something like 120 people recognized as political prisoners in Azerbaijan.
Wow.
That's a lot of people. And he is only representative. I mean, he's one person among many.
Yes. Well, please let us know if there's anything that we can do on the American Booksellers for Free Expression side. We would love to be of assistance in any way. Is there anything else that you want to share with us that I didn't ask you about?
I think, you know, it's what you said, and I really want to emphasize, don't read the book because it's your duty to read the book. Read the book because you want to read a good book. The characters are fascinating. The stories they tell are new and different.
Yes.
And you know, this is a writer above and beyond anything else. What a writer most wants is to be read.
Mm-hmm.
And if we succeed in having people read his stories and become interested in his country and his situation because of it, that's super. But mostly he wants to be read.
Understood. Thank you so much, Catherine, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Introducing custom metal bottle cap magnets by Come From The Heart. These customized magnets are sold in gift shops nationwide to promote national parks and cities, and in independent bookstores, where a portion of the proceeds go to benefit the American Booksellers for Free Expression. Come From The Heart believes in giving back and lifting up others in the process of doing business. The company proudly provides a living wage for the team members who assemble their beautifully designed promotional products. Learn more at www.custombottlecapmagnets.com or by calling owner Ian Rudick at 828-505-8175.
You are listening to Counterspeak, the free speech report of the American Booksellers for Free Expression.
Counterspeak, two things, doing nothing and overreacting.
So the first way is by...
Freedom of speech.